From banking to air traffic control systems and to controlling the United States Defense Department, there's a computer language called Ada. It's named after Ada Lovelace, a 19th century mathematician and daughter of Lord Byron. Ada Lovelace is this week's Great Life. She's been called many things, but perhaps most poetically by Charles Babbage, whom she worked with on a steam-driven calculating machine called the Difference Engine. He called her an enchantress of numbers, as her similarly mathematical mother had been called by Lord Byron a princess of parallelograms. And Ada Lovelace has been championed by my guest, TV presenter and writer Connie Huck, most well known for presenting the BBC children's programme Blue Peter, which she did for 10 years, making her the programme's longest-serving female presenter. Connie, do you have a love of numbers?
I do, actually, yes. My dad was actually a statistician. He was going to be an actuary, which is why he came over to London in the 60s. I was going to go into engineering, so I did maths A-level and then was going to do further maths A-level. I did maths A-level a year early, but then happened to get a job in television, so I never did the further maths. But I did all science A-levels, physics and chemistry as well.
How was that with your parents? Do they want you to be a mathematician or a scientist?
Well, I think they probably, in the first place, pushed me more towards the science side of things when it came to studying. They would have liked for me to be an engineer or a doctor. But, you know, growing up, I did love acting and drama and public speaking and all of that, which I sort of did as a hobby, because it was very important to go to university and get a degree. I had that sort of drummed into me.
Where did they come from, your parents?
So my parents came over in the 60s from Bangladesh.
Yes.
And, yeah, so I'm second generation. And I think they very much came over to give their kids a good education.
And they didn't mind you being a children's TV presenter?
Well, I think by the time I started presenting on Blue Peter, I'd already gone to university and got a good degree at a good university. And then also Blue Peter is thought of as, you know, very respectable. So I think it was OK by then.
Before we get on to Ada Lovelace, whom you've chosen, a preliminary question about her reputation rather than about her.
Mm.
It's a fantastic choice. She's an amazing person.
Yes.
Why the hell haven't we heard of her before? You obviously have, but I've never heard her name before.
Yeah, and a lot of people said the same thing when I mentioned that I was doing a Great Lives on Ada Lovelace. It's a shame. She seems to have been overshadowed by Charles Babbage when it comes to the history of looking at the birth of computing and the computer. And I think because she didn't actually invent the computer, she is essentially the world's first computer programmer. You know, often if someone's actually invented something, they get a lot more recognition for it. That it's sort of just happened that she's very much sort of brushed under the carpet, I'd say.
We know that it was Ada's mother who steered her daughter towards mathematics, an extraordinary thing in itself. To tell us more about our great life and about Ada's origins, let's bring in our expert, Sue Charman Anderson, who's a social technologist who started the Ada Lovelace Day, an annual event which celebrates the achievements of women in science, technology, engineering and mathematics. Sue, what's your answer to the question that I put to Connie? Why have we not heard more about Ada Lovelace?
I think Ada's an interesting character because there's been quite a lot of controversy about her contributions. And so when you look at the biographies that have been written about her, I think it would be very easy for the casual reader to think, well, she didn't really achieve that much.
Just a sidekick to Babbage.
She just threw parties and was a sort of society lady. But actually, her contributions are much deeper than you can see just by skimming the surface of the list of her achievements.
Tell us about how this woman, who was born before Victorian times, ended up as a mathematician.
Ada was the daughter of Lord Byron, and Anne Isabella Milbank, who was known to everybody as Annabella. And she was the only legitimate offspring from Lord Byron.
They were only married for a year, weren't they?
Married for a year. Not necessarily a very happy marriage either. But Annabella was really concerned that Ada would inherit her father's madness, his poetical tendencies, if you like. And she thought that mathematics would be a good discipline for Ada, and that if she schooled Ada in maths and science, that this would help her keep control of her emotions. It would allow her to be a proper young lady rather than the wild and tempestuous woman that she feared Ada might grow into.
I see. So in a way, it was partly a defensive strategy against her husband, or against the offspring inheriting the husband's nature.
Absolutely. I mean, Annabella herself was incredibly intelligent, and this was an era where women just didn't get a schooling. It was really unusual for women to be educated. And Annabella herself was taught by Cambridge professors. She couldn't go to university herself. That wasn't allowed. But she certainly had a very solid education of her own.
It was quite a rigorous upbringing, wasn't it, Connie? Annabella, the mother, kind of forced the daughter to have all these...
Very controlling. She was, even when Ada grew up, Annabella was very much a dominant force. I don't know whether that's got something to do with, perhaps, no, something to do with the fact that after she broke up with Lord Byron, she was very, very heartbroken and also very angry. And so this sort of controlling element of her was just one way that she felt that she still had a grip with Byron's child, to some extent.
I think there was a degree of terror in Annabella that she would lose her daughter to the same kind of insanity that she saw Byron exhibiting.
Because he left the country, never came back, and died 8 years later, didn't he?
Yeah, so the marriage was actually really quite short. There were rumours of abuse, of violence. Byron drank very heavily. And this was around the time that Byron was also in financial difficulties. And he had suggested to Annabella that she take their daughter back to Annabella's parents' estate while he sorted everything out. And so they had what was supposed to be a temporary separation, but in fact it was permanent. And the divorce was very acrimonious. There was a lot of bitterness from Annabella.
And she never let Ada read her father's poetry.
The Victorians loved this rumour that Ada never read her father's poetry. She did read her father's poetry. She just didn't like it very much. And in actual fact, there's a wonderful quote where she says that she thought that she would make a better mathematician than Byron was a poet.
That must have delighted her mother.
Yeah. I suspect it did. But I mean, her mother didn't even let her see any portraits of her father until she was 20.
Looking at a picture of her here, let me show it to you. She looks rather fashionable, flighty young thing, with her hair beautifully done in little rolls on each side and little rosy cheeks. You can't really picture her as a little girl who was apparently fascinated by machines of every kind.
She actually hated that picture. I mean,
yeah, she wasn't massively,
I'm not surprised,
flouncy.
Yes, flouncy is the word. But she was fascinated by machines, wasn't she, Connie?
I mean, she obviously had inherited her mother's analytical mind, which is perhaps why she disliked her father's poetry. But then when you read things she's written, she definitely has a sort of creative flair. Her personality definitely comes out. So I think, in a way, she's a weird mix of being extremely sort of vivacious and creative and actually a bit of a wild child like her dad, and then having this amazing mind that people like Babbage would comment on.
To illustrate exactly what you're saying about this strange mix of the kind of slightly romantic and the seriously analytical, there's a letter that she wrote as a little girl to Faraday, the I don't suppose he was the inventor of electricity, but he's the father of modern electricity. And read the letter out, would you, Connie?
Dear Mr. Faraday, I am exceedingly tickled with your comparison of yourself to a tortoise. It has excited all my fun, and I assure you, I have no little of that in me. I am also struck with the forcible truth of your designation of my character of mind. Elasticity of intellect. It is indeed the very truth, most happily put into language. You have excited in my mind a ridiculous but not ungraceful allegorical picture, that of a quiet, demure, plodding tortoise with a beautiful fairy gambolling around it in a thousand radiant and varying hues, the tortoise crying out,
Fairy, fairy, I am not like you.
And this is the girl, she was 14 when she wrote that letter, who's going to turn out in some ways as the mother of modern computer program. What an extraordinary story.
I mean, you can almost see a poet in her at 14, can't you, really?
I mean, she was desperate to have Faraday be one of her tutors. She had some really astonishing tutors at the time. Augustus De Morgan, who's the father of symbolic logic, Mary Somerville, who is an astronomer and mathematician. And she really, really wanted Faraday to tutor her, and he was having none of it. And you can just imagine, you know, Faraday, I think he was about 53 at this time. He's quite sort of quite stern. He's very religious. He's very prim and proper. And his aide are kind of going, ooh, I'm a fairy. and it's a wonderful example of how imaginative she was and how sort of playful her character was.
How did she meet Babbage?
She was introduced to Babbage by Mary Somerville. They met in 1833. Ada was 18. And Ada was absolutely fascinated by the work that Babbage was doing on the difference engine, which was a mechanical calculating machine that was essentially invented to calculate large tables of numbers. Because at the time, if you were doing any kind of complicated maths, if you needed to use trigonometry or logarithms, then you had tables that had been computed by hand. The original computers were people. But obviously people make mistakes. And if you're basing your maths on a table that has errors in it, then your math is going to come out wrong too.
Now, listen, I'm going to... This is a challenge, and it may not be one that we can meet, but I'm going to ask a really stupid question. They say that Babbage is the father of modern computing. It trips easily from the tongue, and that these machines were the first computers. What is the difference conceptually between a computer and a calculating machine? Because the abacus, for instance, that the Chinese had for a very long time is a kind of calculating machine. What's the step change, would you say, Connie, that that Babbage brought in?
Well, funnily enough, I'd say Ada would have brought in more than Babbage, because the difference machine was essentially a calculating machine, whereas Ada actually saw that computers had possibilities beyond just working out numbers. So, for instance, nowadays, you know, we use computers to do absolutely everything. You can draw pictures and do graphic design and so on and so forth.
Babbage actually started off with the difference engine, which is the calculator. And the government gave him a significant amount of money, £16,000 or so, which was a lot of money in those days, to finish it. And he never really did, because he got distracted by his next invention, which was the analytical engine. And it's the analytical engine which was the general purpose computing machine that Babbage had put together. Or he started to design it. He never actually built it, but it had a lot of things that we would recognise from modern computers. So it was programmed by punch cards. So punch cards were still being used in the 40s with the Harvard Mark I.
Hmm.
It also had a lot of the parts that we would consider as being essential to modern computing. So it had an arithmetical unit, it had conditional branching and looping, it had an integrated memory. I mean, Babbage even invented a printer to go with it. And the issue is that this machine could do much more complicated processes than just adding and subtracting. And Ada's flash of brilliance was, I think, two things. Firstly, to understand that it could calculate things that had not previously been calculated by a human first. She translated a paper by an Italian mathematician called Luigi Menabrea and added some notes to this paper. The paper was about the analytical engine, and she tripled its length.
Because we're talking about the early Victorian
times, 1842,
yes.
I think,
yes,
she published that paper.
Young Queen's only just on the throne, yeah.
So you could put in an algorithm, you could program it, and then the result that you got out would be a result that you hadn't known of first. The second leap was that she understood that it could actually do a lot more than produce these beautiful error-free tables that Babbage was so caught up in. So she actually said that it could create art, it could create music, if only it were programmed in the right way. And at that time, that was a massive conceptual leap.
It's truly visionary.
That's absolutely like the computers we use today, yes. Really. That's her being, yeah, futuristic.
And I think the problem that she had at the time was that no one really understood what she was getting at.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, Babbage didn't. Mm. She saw the opportunity far more clearly than Babbage did.
You're listening to Great Lives with me, Matthew Paris, where my guest Connie Huck is championing Ada Lovelace with the help of our expert Sue Charman-Anderson. So to recap, 18-year-old Ada, daughter of Lord Byron, has been excelling in mathematics. Her appetite to learn more, fueled by her meeting with Charles Babbage, the father of the modern computer, as we've said. She's been blown away by his work, though the work was totally unfinished, both on his difference engine and on his analytical engine. Because she married William King, who quickly became Earl Lovelace, and she became the Right Honourable the Countess Lovelace. Was that a real love affair, do you think?
I'm not so sure she was into him.
Ada would be very open with men, which was quite scandalous at the time. So she would write letters to people and be quite improper in ways that we would probably find quite normal now. You know, she would talk to people and have, you know, meetings and so on and so forth. But I think her relationship with William King was not the most loving of relationships. He was quite proper, quite Victorian, rather like her mother. On the other hand, he did support her. He did support her ambitions to work with Babbage, to continue her education.
She did it rather in the modern way, in that she had a couple of children, was it two or three?
Three.
And then got on with her career after that. Let's go back for a moment to what was, I suppose, really the threshold of her academic career. You mentioned Luigi Menabrea and the Bernoulli numbers. She hadn't the confidence at first to take his work further. She simply translated it. Mm. And then Babbage and others said to her, don't just translate it, tell people what it means.
Yes, Babbage actually wrote to her and said, you should add some notes to this, some of your own thoughts. And she goes in some detail about how she would create this program that would run on the analytical engine and would calculate these Bernoulli numbers. That was the point of the program, was to prove that you could calculate numbers by machine without first working them out. And she works out the how to break the sequence down into formula and then how to represent those formula in symbolic logic and how that would then be coded to run on the analytical engine, a computing machine which was never built, and so she could never actually test her program. And she did all of that basically in her head and with a pen and piece of paper.
Now, here's the fly in the ointment. There are those who sneer at Lovelace and say that really the work on the Bernoulli numbers and all the rest was basically Babbage and that all she did was tweak it a bit.
Yes. I think this misunderstanding comes from Babbage's autobiography, which he wrote he was kind of nearing 80. Ada had been dead for a long time. Maybe Babbage's memory wasn't quite what it was. And it hinges on one particular sentence where he talks about how he provided the algebraic working out of the different problems. That is really vague. So he says that he did the algebra for Bernoulli to save Lady Lovelace the trouble. But we don't really know what that means because they didn't have the language. They didn't have the word program. They didn't have the word computer the way that we do. So it's very difficult to actually say exactly what Babbage meant by that. But when we look at the letters to and fro, the fact that when she sends him this second version of the Bernoulli program, he replies, I like very much the improved form of the Bernoulli note, but can judge of it better when I have the diagram and notation.
From her?
From her.
Yeah.
So she still had more to send him, and he didn't understand the program without that extra information.
So what motivates these people who say that it wasn't really her? Are they just chauvinists?
I wonder. I mean, the thing is there's so many disjointed notes and documents from the period that people, depending on what people have seen and what people have read and who people personally champion, I think they can draw their own story. And so I'm not sure that it's like, oh, we're anti-Ada.
Some people might just find it difficult to think that a woman, particularly at that time, could have done any important work at all.
I think absolutely that her gender does play into it, that there are people around who say, well, you know, she was just a society party girl. And she certainly did throw parties because everybody did at the time. It was sort of part of her place in society, if you like. But she definitely had a mind that Augustus de Morgan described her as, you know, of first-rate eminence. She really was someone who impressed the most forward-thinking thinkers of the day. So I think to dismiss her contribution is a little unfair. It's rather like saying, I mean, there's no doubt that Babbage and Ada collaborated very, very closely on a lot of this. To dismiss her contribution is to basically say that when women work in teams with men, that they don't actually produce anything and aren't key to what comes out the other end.
Now, where the party girl whom you describe meets the analytical mind, there was rather a failure. She became very interested in equations and machines that could make you money on betting on horses and lost a lot of money, didn't she?
Towards the end of her life, she did rather develop a love of gambling and the ponies.
And the wine.
Yeah, well, again, you know, at the time, pretty much everybody was on the wine and the opium and the laudanum and the absinthe. So she wasn't unusual there at all. It was kind of fairly normal. But the gambling was a little bit more of a challenge for her because as a woman, she didn't have money or property. So she formed a syndicate with some male friends and tried to build this mathematical model that would presumably reduce the risk of large bets, and lost a couple of £1,000 on a race where, surprise, surprise, the favourite won.
Well, at least it's linked yes. to her, you know, her love of numbers and equations.
She ended up in serious debt, though, and also in some scandal, because there were a couple of affairs, one with a fellow called John, John Cross, who then blackmailed her husband.
I think her behaviour was quite standard of men of the era, and yeah. It causes more scandal because she's a woman.
Towards the end of her life, she did have an affair with John Cross, who was the son of Andrew Cross, an early pioneer of electricity. And we don't really know much about the nature of the relationship. We don't know how close exactly they were, because when Ada died, her mother and I presume also her husband were quite keen to tidy up after her. So Earl Lovelace made an agreement with John Cross that for the receipt of a sum of money, he would dispose of about 100 or so letters between Ada and John. And that's exactly what happened.
It must have been quite a serious affair.
It was a very serious affair because Ada had very few possessions of her father's, and she bequeathed all of those to John Cross. And as she lay dying, she was distraught at the idea that she would not see John Cross again. So they were obviously incredibly close, and he must have meant an awful lot to her. And there's also a record of the fact that she had a conversation with her husband on her deathbed, and he left and never saw her again.
We're talking about her deathbed here. How old was she?
36. Young.
She died of uterine cancer, probably exacerbated by bleeding, which was a standard procedure at the time. It's so sad. I mean, and what's even sadder is towards the end of her life, she'd become an atheist. And Annabella, in one last gasp to try and control her daughter,
her mother, yeah.
basically refuses to give her painkillers, refuses to give her morphine, and until she has converted back to Christianity.
It's terrible, isn't yeah. it? She is essentially the world's first computer programmer.
Yeah.
You know, and in this computer age that we live in, yeah, it's tragic.
Who rescued her reputation?
Alan Turing, I think, was instrumental in that. Her documentation was obviously left behind. Turing found that in his search for anything that could inspire him during the Second World War. And he said it was incredibly important in influencing how he viewed computers and computing. And I think that acknowledgement was incredibly important because Turing really did sort of set us up for modern computing.
At her insistence, she was buried next to her father, Lord Byron, in Hucknall in Nottinghamshire, where the grave still is. I want to put to you, Connie, something that Babbage said, partly jokingly, but I suspect not entirely, in a letter to Michael Faraday. He described Ada as that enchantress who has thrown her magical spell around the most abstract of sciences and has grasped it with a force which few masculine intellects could ever have exerted over it. I find that remark fascinating because to have taken a woman to do the great conceptual leaps.
Because Ada has both traits, she's got the analytical mind and she's interested in the mathematics and the mechanics of things, but then she's also got that sort of creative side. I think that's what enabled her to see beyond just the fact that you can calculate numbers that would have to be put into arduous tables. And so from that perspective, then a female mind like Ada's that sort of had both ends of the spectrum could see far beyond when it came to the possibilities and capabilities of what a computer could do.
I wonder how far. Wouldn't you like to take her by the hand, she who died the age of 36, and lead her now to rooms full of children working on computers and show her where her thoughts and her ideas, her advanced thinking has led?
Definitely. She was so born in the wrong era. If she were she born today, you know, she would be the Tim Berners-Lee or the Bill Gates or someone better and beyond. And with her personality and her whole package, I think, you know, she would definitely be some sort of amazing, iconic celebrity that would show women, look, you can be a pioneer in the fields of mathematics and science. You know, it's a shame she was born when she was, because I think being born in that time really did suppress what her potential was and her capabilities.
My thanks to Connie Huck, who has championed the life of Ada Lovelace, and to our expert, Sue Charman-Anderson, who will want me to mention that this year, Ada Lovelace Day is on the 15th of October. Goodbye.